Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's that lump that's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
Alright, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Oh, Walker, 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 Walker. Not the Texas Ranger. Mr. Walker Buehler.
Walker Buehler.
What a game. What a hell of a game. How about that?
Yeah, well, is there, I mean, I know he had a great game.
Might have been certainly one of the greatest non-no-hitters in Dodger history. We are back. I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. This is West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. And, oh yes, 16 strikeout complete game, a three-hitter. Two of those hits were, you know, admittedly bad pitches. He said he made three bad pitches. They were all hits. Yeah. And two of them were home runs by two of the best players or two of the best batters in the league right now, Arenado right. and Blackman. Man, it was going to be a good game anyway. It was a rematch of game 163 from last year.
Right, it was.
Herman Marquez versus Walker Buehler. Yeah, and then that was a very low-scoring, fraught game, a lot of tension. And so this was kind of the rematch, if you will. Dodgers are up, 1-0, then tied, then 2-1, then tied. And Walker Buehler is now the only pitcher in Dodgers history with more than 15 strikeouts and no walks in a game since the mound was moved 60 feet 6 inches in 1893.
Wow.
So, very dominant to say the least. He did it against the best hitting team in the National League. So, no small feat, certainly. A hell of a game. And in four June starts, he struck out 42 with one walk.
42-1, that's...
That's
a pretty good clip. Yeah, the Dodgers pitchers have been more or less dominant against the entire league.
Oh, yeah. And especially the division, certainly.
Especially the division, yes.
Just got done with a four-game series in Los Angeles against the San Francisco Giants.
That was a great series as well.
Bit of a rematch between Bumgarner and one Max Muncy. And
yes, I sent you. I found a link and sent it to you, and I can see that you took full advantage of it. And that's, I think that's a good thing.
If
in case you haven't seen it, there was, of course, last week there was a three-game series in San Francisco against the same two teams. Mac Muncy hit a monster home run against Bumgarner, and there was a little bit of a stare down from the mound.
No, there was some chirping from the mound.
It was quite a bit of a jawing to it. And I think that Mac Muncy got the better of Madison Bumgarner twice in this interaction. One with the home run itself, which went as far as I've ever seen
not since
Barry Bonds. Yeah. It
went into like the motored section of
the water. It did. It cleared the area that the Coast Guard has sectioned off for unotored craft only. It was
past the kayaks.
Well past the kayaks and out, and this was past the kayaks in the far corner from the plate too. So this was hit a long way.
Monster.
It's hard to describe this. You have to watch the video of it, but
or you can just read my t-shirt right now. Go get it out of the water.
Go get it out of the ocean, I believe was sorry, the actual yes. quote.
Yes, I can't read my
and that's what Muncie said to
Bummy as Bumgarner as
Bumgarner yeah. apparently said, you know, stop looking at it and run. And he said, you don't want me to look at it, go get it out of the ocean. And I don't know. It's pretty funny. At least
he needs to relax. He got to give him some Prozac or something, man. But, I mean, Muncie ran. He was running to first.
Yeah, I didn't think that was Derek Dietrich,
like, stop and stare, drop your arms, and just watch it.
Yeah,
it
no,
like
this, he didn't. I don't even think the bat flip was even inappropriate. It was.
No, really, no flip.
He just wants to be the red ass old mad bum. But
he is truly mad bum. Although maybe now he's becoming mad like crazy. I don't you know.
I don't know. He did. He was able to laugh about it at the end of the game post press conference.
I was more impressed by how quickly they got these shirts made. I mean, literally overnight. Because the next day the Dodgers are at least wearing him in BP.
Yeah, he's wearing him in BP, but not. Was it the next day or the day 2 days after?
I thought it was the next day. I mean, could be wrong, but yeah. Either way,
once they were back home for their homestand, they were wearing them. They weren't wearing them in BP against the Giants.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, you don't want to rub salt in those wounds, but it's not. You know.
Well, apparently there was a lot of those T-shirts in the stands the other night, but
and there will be the next time the Dodgers are here. I'm sure. That was pretty good. I do like that. Speaking of pitchers, what's this? There's rumblings of New York trying to go after the first three eye colored pitcher in baseball history.
Oh,
Max
yes.
Scherzer, right?
Yes.
Brian Cashman reportedly saying, quote, whatever it takes. He's going to do whatever it takes to land Max Scherzer. Mr. Broken Face.
Mr. Broken Face breaks his nose in batting practice, practicing bunts.
It was a bat. It was pretty ugly, too. He wasn't even really. It was just he was talking. And then
I can't imagine that move would be very graceful under any circumstances. But to his credit, the very next day he went out there and pitched a pretty
dominant.
Good game.
Yeah, really good. I think he kind of thrives on the I think he likes that bit of the adversity. Plus,
he
looked crazy. I mean, he always looks crazy.
Well, he always looks crazy.
A blue eye and a brown eye, but then you throw a black eye in there, and it's like, whoa, okay. All right, this guy looks like he's going to, like, eat your children or something.
Well, and this guy is always he has already a reputation for being a pretty tough guy when it takes to blows to the noggin. I mean, I was at the World Series game when he was still pitching for the Tigers when he took a line drive off of the noggin and stayed in the game and did reasonably well.
So New York, the Yankees already exceeded their first two luxury tax thresholds, $206 and $226 million. And they're going to have to pass it the third level, which is the $246 million level, which carries the harshest penalties if they want to make some big additions before the trade deadline. But while exceeding the third luxury tax threshold would come with a 42.5% tax on their overages and cause the highest 2020 or their highest 2020 draft pick to drop 10 spots, the Yankees are seeming like they're going all in. And I mean, their lineup is insane. They basically have an all-star lineup if you can count Judge and Stanton in there and healthy in October, which they probably will be. I mean, who knows? We'll see. But now with Encarnacion, they're stacked.
It's
disgusting.
It's nearly unfair.
It's crazy.
But
so,
that's always the complaint against the Yankees. So this scenario
is not... Oh, no, they'll still
not,
lose. You know, it's okay. But they do... If they do get Max Scherzer, I mean... It's going to be tough. It's going to pretty much rule out the Red Sox, I would imagine.
They might.
I mean, yeah.
Where are the Red Sox this year? They're not nearly having as good
back.
A season as they did last year.
Well, because neither is Sale. I mean, he's not doing as bad as he was to start the season, but we all know he never finished the season well. So yeah, it's, you know, the Rays, maybe. Rays coming in. Although, are we going to be seeing the Rays spend half their season in Montreal? Is this coming?
Not if it's up to the mayor of Montreal.
Well, but he
or
only
Tampa Bay.
Only through 2027. After 2027, all bets are off. And so, but if they can get like the city council or whatever to approve it, then they can do it before. And, you know, mayors don't last forever. And their ballpark is, what are they? They're averaging like 12 or 13,000 fans per game. So get them the hell out of Trop. Put them in some other smaller park, right? Maybe the park that already
a better
exists.
Park.
Or just build them a cheaper one, right? They said like they would save like $500 million if they just gave them a smaller park, essentially. And or a park without a roof, because it's, you know, if they play the first half in Florida, they won't need the roof because it's not going to be like scorching hot. They pretty much need
or
the roof.
Or raining every day.
Yeah, that too. And then if they play the second half in Montreal, you know, same thing. They can pretty much probably play at a place that already exists or spend the money that, I don't know.
And if they manage to make the playoffs, then what? Where do they play
the
games?
Yeah, that's weird. In case, we sort of skipped over this. In case you guys haven't heard, the Major League Baseball's executive council has granted the Rays permission to explore the possibility of playing a split season schedule between Tampa Bay and Montreal.
This might just be a test to test the market in Montreal to see if a major league team would draw enough to consider putting a team there full time.
I would be willing to bet dollars to donuts that they would draw more people in Montreal than they do currently in Tampa Bay.
This is true, but for how long? I mean, can they sustain the interest?
And how does season tickets work? And like you were saying, yeah, the playoffs and everything. But, hey, I mean, it's weird. It does seem weird. It's not completely unprecedented. What was the Expos played in Puerto Rico, didn't they? 22 home games in Puerto Rico in 2003. They're the last team to split its home schedule between different cities. And then, they eventually relocated to D.C.
Which has nothing to do with Puerto Rico,
well,
per se.
Yeah. But it's happened before. It's
okay. Possible. I get it.
But, as a player, I mean, what do you got to buy two apartments? You got to lease two apartments?
You live at a hotel out of one city? And
that would be not, another thing. You know, that wouldn't be great. That would not be fun, I'm assuming, for anybody to have to do that, especially with the family, whatever. Plus, of course, the income taxes in Canada are going to be way higher than they would be here. I don't know how that works with Toronto.
Well, it's still part of Canada. They'd be paying Canadian
income
tax.
It's an American company, though, right? Or, I don't know. I don't know how that works.
I don't know.
I wouldn't want to be a part of that. As a player, I wouldn't want to be paying Canadian taxes, you know.
Well, I think in the grand scheme of things, when you're talking about that much of money, it won't make that big of a difference.
Yeah, it will. I mean, it's all percentages.
Well, I mean,
the more you make, the more you pay.
But this is one of the arguments of why that California teams can't bring in big, high-priced free agents, but still high-priced free agents are signed in California.
The highest state taxes in America are nothing close to British taxes and Canada for that matter. I mean, it's most Western countries have a much, much higher tax rate than the U.S. does. Right? They pay more for everything. I mean, really.
Well, you have to pay for the healthcare somehow.
Well, college. Yeah, exactly. No, it's true. But I'm just saying, I would not want any part of that if I'm an American baseball player. But it would be cool to playing in Montreal, you know, if they could somehow figure that out. But I don't know. I mean, this is all, of course, just a lot of conjecture. But, you know, the fact that Rob Manfred even was quoted as saying, they're trying to, quote, preserve baseball in Tampa, but improve the economics of the club overall by playing some of their games in Montreal. So I don't know. Where would you? I mean, I would like to see it as a fan. But in reality, that sounds like it would be pretty terrible.
I do.
Jesus Christ. Is that your computer just wheezing over there? What's that noise?
It is my computer wheezing.
Things on life support. Sorry. You guys are wondering, that is not your speaker. It is.
Or a 747 outside.
Or, yeah, right. Although there usually is some city noise on this podcast. We do have all the windows closed. It is a hot day for San Francisco. I want to say it's 79.
It is. And it is also now officially summer. The summer solstice
that's
being yesterday.
That's correct. And now your computer is not happy. I don't know what's going on over there, but that thing is angry.
It is pretty warm. And it doesn't like the warmth.
Oh, man. So Pete Alonso tied the rookie record for home runs in the National League before the All-Star break, set by Cody Bellinger in 2017 with 25. But as we are speaking, the Mets are playing the Cubs right now, and Pete Alonso has another home run. So he is now the National League rookie record. Yeah. And I mean, we still have a week or two before the All-Star break anyway, so who knows what's going to happen there. He's just been hot. He has been swinging a hot bat this whole season. He's 2-for-4 today as we speak. I mean, it's the eighth inning right now, but the Mets, it's weird. They don't seem that bad on paper. I have a few of them on my fantasy team, and you know, I'm not doing too bad, but they can't seem to get the wins. What's going on there? Oh, man, you got to get that
thing. It's the Mets.
Got to get that away from the mic. That thing is insane. Sorry. It's the Mets themselves. It's the curse of the Mets, the come-get-us Mets. I think they've been got. Is that what's happening?
I think so. I'm sorry. I'm distracted trying
technical
to cool down my computer. Do you have any technical difficulties?
Jesus Christ.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
Yeah, we can't. We're trying, so just bear with us here on that one. Dallas Keuchel made his 2019 debut against the Nationals. Tough loss for him going up against Steven Strasburg. He didn't do too bad. He didn't do too poorly. He took the loss, giving up 8 hits. Well, that's not great, but 4 runs, 3 earned runs, in 5 innings with 3 strikeouts. You can't expect a guy who hasn't pitched a single frame in the entire year to just come in late June and be okay, right? I mean, what do you think? I mean, how is he going to fare the rest of the season?
I think it'd be fine. It probably won't be on quite such a pace. People.
Yeah. Well,
but, you know, there's no indication right now that he's going to be slowing down.
I wonder if it'd be tougher if you were like a high-velocity strikeout pitcher, or if you're a finesse pitcher like Keuchel is. Keuchel isn't a high strikeout guy, but he is all about feel. He's all about, you know, just finesse, essentially, right? So do you think it'd be harder for somebody that's more of a finesse pitcher to pick it up halfway through the season, or a guy that just throws gas? Because, I don't know, I mean...
Well, it becomes the issue of mechanics. If he can, from what I understand about pitching and the study of pitching, what happens with a pitcher if their mechanics are even slightly off, if there's something wrong, that just a small change can change the way that the ball flies out of their hand, and it makes a big difference for control, whether you throw 97 or 89 with a lot of movement. That movement is what matters, and that movement comes from the mechanics and the arm slots and the way that the ball is thrown. And if that's consistent, the pitcher is going to be consistent.
Yeah.
And if it's off, the pitcher is going to get off. He's going to get hit more and everything, and it can happen to anyone at any time. That's why. But the guys that I think just throw heat, I think that can get by for a little bit longer with just throwing it by people.
Right. Because
they can't catch up with it. But a guy who relies on location and movement and the finesse more than just the raw velocity will have, you know, be more sensitive to changes like that. So as long as he can get into his groove, they say that he spent all his off time this season pitching simulated games,
right,
which indicates that he's throwing 80 to 100 pitches, presumably under watch of a coach so that his mechanics stay sound and his arm stays in shape. And if that's true, I think he'll actually be fine for the rest of the season.
Baseball, it's virtually impossible to just get in there and start pitching. I mean, even if you have an extensive 4 or 5 months of sim games.
Well, sure, sim games is not the same as throwing a game in anger to live batting.
The muscle memory is there, but attaching the brain to that's where the difference obviously lies the most, because, you know, instead of your own catcher calling balls and strikes, you actually are beholden to the umpires, of course, and you're on a team that's, you know, probably going to be a postseason contender.
The umpires are a whole nother story, which I believe that we'll get to a little bit later. But yeah, I hear you. I mean, the way that a batter will react to a given pitch in a given situation is impossible to necessarily simulate.
Yeah.
But I've never been privy to one of these simulated games before. But generally, I believe that the pitcher is fed mentally the situation that it comes into and pitches himself in and out of. I don't know how.
Usually the catcher says that was a ball, that was a strike. And, you know, if he's trying to be harsh, he'll, like, you know, he'll make it a lot, the strike zone a lot tighter. You know, I mean, look, I'm sure he's had plenty of practice. He's had plenty of time. But I think the main thing is, you know, is he going to be mentally ready? But who knows? By October, maybe he'll be a lot fresher than most guys were that have already played in April and May and June. And so who knows? And he's used to the high leverage situations, so couldn't be that crazy, I'm sure. And speaking of craziness, how about this Rockies Padres Coors Field craziness?
Oh man, that was crazy. They set a record for the number of runs.
It was insane.
Scored in a 3-game series.
It was mind blowing.
As the
great, venerable Vin Scully once said while broadcasting a game at Coors Field, you don't need an official scorer at Coors Field. You need a certified public accountant. And this last series with the Padres certainly proved that. It could not have been more accurate. In this series alone, the two teams piled up 92 runs, 131 hits, 27 doubles, 7 triples, 17 home runs, 42 walks, 3 stolen bases. This is kind of funny. 44 hits with runners in scoring position in a mind-blowing 121 at-bats, which is insane. 346 hitters coming to the plate. 38 pitching changes, 15 one-run innings, 10 two-run innings, 9 three-run innings, and 2 four-run innings, and 2 six-run innings.
You know, that stat line, you know, it sounds like a really good season for one player.
Or a month for a team. Yeah. No, so how insane is 92 runs in a series?
I can't even wrap my mind around it.
I'm going to tell you, there had not been 92 runs scored in any series of 4 games or shorter since 1900. Wow. And it hadn't happened in a series of any length since an 8-game series between the Yankees and the White Sox with the Lou Gehrig age from August 25th to 28th, 1935. Back at Petco Park, where the Padres usually play, there weren't 92 runs scored in the entire month of April. In fact, it wasn't even close. The Padres and, you know, the teams they played against combined to score 81 runs all month.
And what's really incredible of all of the offense they produced in that series against the Rockies, they went home, played the Brewers the very next day after the series concluded, and they won just 2-0.
Baseball law of averages evening out?
I think it might be, but I mean,
131 hits? I had to read this a few times because
you picked the wrong weekend to go to Colorado.
I know, I guess. I mean, Jesus, man, that's insane. 131 hits. 2 years ago, just for context, 2 years ago, Max Scherzer pitched over 200 innings, got his third Cy Young Award. and didn't allow 131 hits all season. Yeah. All season. He gave up 126 in 200 innings. Padres got 131 and the Rockies. So it's just insane. It's just crazy. I'm going to keep going on because this is mind-blowing. Until last Friday, in over 3 years, no team had lost a game in which it rang up 12 runs and 18 hits. Then the Rockies did that twice in one weekend. They lost a 16-12 game Friday. Then they lost a 14-13 game Sunday, which they actually had even more runs and more hits. So, you know, how the hell did that happen? Well, the Rockies had lost only two games in the history of their franchise in which they got that many runs and hits. Then they lost two in a 48-hour period. That's baseball, man. It's doesn't even really make sense.
Every time you go to the yard, you're going to see something that you've never seen before.
Right.
At least that's the hope.
Blackman, Charlie Blackman getting 15 hits in one series. After he was out for a while, I mean, it's great for fantasy owners. Four hits Thursday, four hits Friday, four hits Saturday, two hits in the first inning Sunday, and three altogether. He went 15 for 24 with 10 ribbies.
That's an incredible rip.
How many players have ever had 15 hits and 10 ribbies in a series of four games or shorter?
I'm sure you can name them on one hand.
Yeah, zero. It's even easier than that. The last player, according to stats, to get 15-plus hits and 10-plus ribbies in any series of any length, that would be Mr. Gehrig in that aforementioned eight-game series in 1935 where he got 15 hits.
And Lou Gehrig, ribbies. Considered one of the very best players to ever play the game.
Right.
And
he needed a few extra games.
He needed eight games to do what Blackman did in three. What is this? Is this due to pitching? Is this due to the altitude?
It was a four-game series. Okay. But still, that's still half the games. Yes. No, I don't know. You know, it's just one of those things because it's the history of the Rockies franchise. It's only happened twice, and then they lost twice in a row after leading after like eight innings. It's just insane. That's why you can't leave early. You hear that? Never leave the game early.
Never leave early.
It's not over until it's over. Yeah, that's it's baseball.
One of the things that makes baseball so great is that you're never truly out of it until that 27th out is recorded.
This is why it is the greatest outdoor game devised by man. There is no clock. Grown men don't need clocks.
Yeah. Just opportunities. Fancy. How fancy.
I had to. I'm getting hot there. Okay, so but this brings up a question that people are freaking out about, it seems, but are there too many home runs?
Too many home runs.
Right. When there's not enough, baseball gets pissed. And then there's too many
and home
now
runs.
They're freaking out, you know. I mean, what, you know,
I don't know that I can truly say that there are too many home runs.
Right.
I mean, chicks do dig the long ball.
Home runs. Well,
what I think is more than the sheer number of home runs. I don't know if that is a problem per se, but it's also too many home runs combined with too many strikeouts. I think my least favorite part of what is happening the last couple seasons, especially this season, is seems to be all or nothing. It's either a home run or a strikeout, and to me, that's what gets boring. I want to see hits. I want to see doubles off the wall. I want to see triples off the wall. I don't need a home run every inning.
Right.
I want to see hits. I want to see some base running. I want to see some good defense.
The only reason why people are talking about this is because there were more home runs hit in April, 1,010, than in any April in history. There were more home runs hit in May, 1,135, than in any calendar month in history. And now the home run rate in June is 1.42 per game, which has blown past the historic rate set last month at 1.37. So basically, at this rate, there would be more home runs hit than any time in history, about 1,000 more than last year. and more even, say, let's say 900 than in the height of the PED era, let's say the year 2000, and where there were 5,695, but it looks like we're on pace to go for 6,591, about 900 more home runs this year. But again, I don't, you know, some, so okay, is it the ball? Is it the bat? The Braves hitting coach Kevin Seitzer was quoted as saying, "When I played, you had to get a heavier bat to get harder bats. Now the bat companies are all making bats that are harder and lighter. Ronald Acuna Jr., for example, swings a 30-ounce bat. In my day, if you used a 30-ounce bat, it would probably have lasted one at-bat because the wood was so weak." So is
right.
it the technology?
Well, well, a lot of players have switched to maple wood as opposed to the traditional ash. Maple is a tighter grain structure. It is a harder wood for the amount of mass.
They break more too, though.
I don't know that the break rate is any different than ash, but they break differently and more violently than the ash wood. They splinter. They almost explode, where ash wood just chips.
Crack
and, exactly. And unless you hit it in the right spot, in which case it will shear off at the thinner parts, but it won't shatter quite the way that maple does. It's also one of the reasons why you will see players with two-toned bats, is to differentiate the different woods. So they know that everyone can be aware, just looking at the bat, that in case this bat breaks, there could be more debris than usual. However, one thing that is interesting to note is that in the minor leagues, home run records are also being broken.
No, only in AAA. Well, so that's the weird anomaly.
Only in AAA.
Yeah.
And it is weird until you find out that this year in AAA, where these home runs records are being broken, the same ball is being used as in the major league.
Right. So is it the ball? And this is another thing too, right? This is people talking about the drag coefficient. And basically, there's no machine that makes these balls. They're all hand sewn. They're all hand stitched. Right, it's leather. They're all completely.
But is it the
regulated.
Stitching or the winding? And it's, I don't know that if Manfred or whoever's in charge of the baseball, you know, told the companies to make them fly.
No,
but there was some material changes that were made on the inside of the ball.
They're saying that there was no changes made. That's what the official policy is. Yeah, and there's been a lot of reports and everything, people trying to figure it out. But he literally just was saying recently, like, if anybody can figure it out, please tell us. Because there is, basically what they're saying is there is no way to alter drag coefficiency. There's no possible way.
Another thing that comes to mind too is that during the height of the PED era, we call it that, between,
right,
I guess, 97 and 2007.
Probably more like 92 to 2002. But yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
There was the rumors of the ball being juiced, and it just turned out, well, most of the players were juiced.
Right. Or Sosa's bat, but that's a different story.
Well, that's an entirely different story. And even
that's
when...
a great story, too.
And that was towards the end of the PED era anyway.
But you bring up a good point.
Is there a new designer drug that everyone is on that no one's caught on to or been able to devise a test for?
I mean, I would... That's obviously, if it's not the bat, it's not the ball, then you start, your mind has to go there. Well, shit, is this a new PED era? But I think if it were, the guys wouldn't be getting hurt as much as they are, because generally those things tend to keep you on the field, right? They let Roger Clemens throw 220 strikeout games 10 years
apart.
But it's
not that they don't, that they compensate for injuries. It allows you to recover from injury
much quicker.
And since these baseball season is a marathon. These guys play a lot
exactly.
of baseball over the course of 6 months that even the healthiest bodies start to break down. And by adding a chemical to help your body recover, even if you're not actually injured, just fatigued, to be able to recover from that fatigue faster will make a huge difference. But it won't prevent injuries.
Well, guys, it's not going to prevent injuries, hurt. Right. But it'll keep you relatively healthier longer. But anyway, right. I don't know. I don't think that's what it is either. I think, like you were saying before, it's the approach. And the launch angles have gone up. So, okay, among hitters with 20 degrees or more launch angle, in 2015 there were two guys. 2016 there were 9. 2017 there were 12. 18 there were 11. But 2019 there are 19 guys who average that. And so I think this probably has more to do with it. Approach has more to do with it. The lack of stigma against guys who strike out a lot has a lot to do with it, right? Look at like a guy like Aaron Judge, who's like loved and heralded in New York. The guy strikes out 200 times a year. I mean, you know, right. back in the day, that would just be extremely ignoble. That would not be like, you would be ashamed. But nowadays, it's a relaxed nature in that, you know, a coach knows he's not going to let it. He's not gonna have his batters aren't going to get four singles or three singles against Max Scherzer. But if they can get one home run off of him, hey, it was kind of all worth it, right? The pitchers are better. The hitters are better. I think that's what it is.
Are the pitchers better?
They're throwing harder.
We already had a discussion about pitchers. They're throwing
harder. The ball's gonna launch off the bat harder. Yeah, the harder you throw, the harder.
So, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're pitching better. I think there may be just an average of not as good pitching as well. That balls aren't moving as much for pitchers.
The reason I say they're pitching better is because strikeouts are up. But then I guess you could say that maybe that's the approach.
I mean, when I was growing up and learning to hit in Little League, I was always said, don't uppercut the ball because you'll strike out more. Yeah. The idea is to make good, solid contact. If it goes out, you know, great. That is a consequence of hitting the ball hard and well, rather than, you know, just trying to hit run. If
that's
you
old
try to
ball.
Hit home runs,
right.
you're going to strike out. And, well, yeah, so you may hit more home runs, but you have to be really good to be able to hit so many home runs. But you're going to strike out more, and we're seeing that. We're seeing players either strike out or hit home runs. We're not seeing anything in between.
Well, there are a lot of more fly balls, too. There are more flyouts, but not that much more. In fact, the flyout percentage is negligible to where it was 10 years ago.
If that's
the interesting thing.
Well, but also, you know, if you uppercut, you're going to be swinging over the top of the ball.
Yeah.
And if the ball is down and you hit the ball, it's going to hit the top of the ball, which is going to knock it down right into a shift.
Yeah.
I think if it was truly there was more fly ball outs in general, that you know, wouldn't see so much of a shift. But the guys are hitting it on the ground.
That's true. That is strange.
It's going a long way.
That is strange because there are slightly more, but the shift is more popular than it ever was. Anyway, the Orioles are on pace to do something pretty crazy. They will become the first team ever to allow an average of 2 home runs per game. The current rate is 2 right now as we speak.
And this isn't the ignoble word we're using.
Not quite yet. And not just serve up the most long balls in history. Current pace is 324. But at this pace, break the previous record, which was 258. So by nearly 70 homers. So, I mean, it's a good time to be a player in Camden Yards. If you were an opposing player. But there are also a bunch of guys who have already hit more home runs than they hit all last season.
That doesn't surprise me either.
I think a guy that's helping you out, Josh Bell. I believe you have him on your team. Jay Bruce, Tommy La Stella, Ketel Marte, who's just raking right now. Franmil Reyes, Jorge Soler, Derek Dietrich, Daniel Vogelbach. I mean, all these guys have surpassed what they did last year. And it's, you know, we're not even in July yet. Anyway, I don't know why, you know, people are screaming the sky is falling. I don't think it's any of this. I think it's just a difference of opinion. The game philosophy is evolving. Shift. The game's evolving. Yeah, the game. You know, we're talking about the inceptions or the births or the opens or whatever. You know, we still need a new stat for that. That's something that's going. You know, so the game's changing. The game's constantly changing. But did you see Matt Carpenter bunt for a double?
I did.
Yeah,
I did see the thing. I love
that.
I'd love to see more of that.
Why
too.
Aren't we seeing more of that?
I think we might if
we better. Yeah.
So someone starts doing that with some consistency.
It was great. He drags a little bunt to the left field side. It's an extreme shift on him. The pitcher's out there shagging the ball himself. No man's land. Teammates aren't even helping him, backing him up. He just casually, briskly walks into second base. No big deal. The bunt hits since 2011 have actually gone down. And
no one's bunting because they don't want to give up the out.
There's more shifts than there ever has been. Why is it taking them so long to figure this out? I mean, is it ego?
They want home runs.
I mean, that
home
runs
is what's paying the bills.
That's crazy. When you can just get a, it's not even a walk. I mean, you get the points for a base hit, or sometimes even a double. Let's say 2011, there were 608 bunt hits. 2012, there was 590, 528, 567, 531. Fast forward to 2019. 449. Never been okay. Or 2018, 441 for that matter. All right, I know the season isn't over yet, but I hope Carpenter is setting that precedent, because to me, I mean, you know, this is like Rich Hill. Rich Hill gets so pissed when somebody gets a little hit on him when there's an extreme. He hates the shift because, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, that would not have been a hit. That would have been a routine ground out, you know.
Right.
Now it's a free base.
You know, I think I agree with Rich Hill in that, you know, the defense was established to be the average for all hitters.
Right.
That you, every area of the diamond in theory is covered and has realistic shot of being caught.
It's hard. It's hard if you're a manager too. Somebody's giving you this data and you say, look, this guy pulls the ball on the ground, you know, 55% of the time, 60% of the time, 70% of the time, right? Well, then you're kind of like, well, yeah, all right, my hands are tied. I guess I got to do the shift, right? And a lot of times it works. But again, the guy elevates the ball, shift need not apply. Or now, so I, you know, everybody's talking about banning the shift, blah, 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 all this stuff. All two right. Men on each side of the base.
One
way to fix that is just guys start butting for hits, right?
I mean, or trying to hit line drives.
Well, I think they're all trying to do that, but generally
they're all trying to pump it over the plate with an extreme launch angle.
They're trying to get the ball up, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're all swinging for the fences. Some guys do. Yeah, some guys are always looking for a home run. But, you know, not all guys are doing that, right? But they are trying to elevate it because they know they can get it over. Their chances of getting a hit are going to be much higher if they can elevate the ball. Anyway, Miguel Cabrera. But you didn't think I was going to bring up Miguel Cabrera today, did you?
No. What about Miggy?
He's hitting .464 with runners in scoring position. Yeah. Yes. That is
nice.
It's crazy. He's done a lot of amazing things in his career, but he's never hit .400 with men in scoring position before.
Not even when you won the Triple Crown.
No. But Miggy with no one on base, hitting .194. So
was just not trying when there's no one on base.
I don't know, but there has never been any hitter who has had a 270 point gap between those numbers in a full season. It's really strange. So maybe he's Mr. Clutch. He's kind of like David Freese when I think of somebody like that. Like David Freese, I never see that guy get a hit when there's nobody on. But when there's somebody on base, or that's like he's pinch hitting in the eighth inning,
the answer again may be an approach. You know, guys, I know through the years there's a lot of hitters that approach an at bat differently when there's a runner on than when there isn't.
You would think that there would be a way for him to figure that out and try to get into that frame of mind. This happens to golfers a lot. Golf, like some golfers, like Bubba Watson is a good example. When he's saw like an interview with his caddy one time, and he was saying when he's on the fairway, he's good, but when he's like in the thick rough, he's great. You know, he gets dialed in. When you only have one shot to make, in golf especially, because it's very, very, very mental, when you only have one shot to make, a lot of times the pros do it much better than when they have a myriad of options, right? And so maybe, like, you're right, like with Miggy, he's at the plate. He's like, all right, I just got to do this one thing. I just got to get a hit. You know, I got a guy in scoring position. I just got to get him home. I'm not trying to do anything too fancy. But you would think that you would try to mimic that every time you're at the
yeah,
plate.
I was about to say, it's like every time
easier said
in
than
the
done.
League that I got up, I was trying to just get a base hit. Nothing too fancy. Just, you know, get the bat on the ball and good things
yeah.
tend to happen.
Generally speaking, that there's one guy that's done that probably better than anybody, and that'd be Ichiro Suzuki, and
right.
he would admit to that. I mean,
just
but,
wants to get a hit.
But he's maybe a machine. I mean, I don't even know if he's actual
human,
he's an actual human being. But generally, though, it's very, very difficult to do that. But I thought that was a pretty cool feat. There's also this. So since he was the Tigers' opening day first baseman this year. Home runs in 2019. Tigers' first basemen have 4. Mets' pitchers have 5. That could have been the ignoble award, but it's pretty boring. Now, of course, you know, he's DHing more than he games when he's playing first, but it does seem pretty crazy that any team's first base squad can get out hit by any pitchers, any team's pitching staff. I don't know. Anyway, speaking of pitchers, though, CeCe Sabathia joined the 250 win club last week.
Right.
Is he Hall of Fame?
Most likely. He has the longevity. He certainly has the numbers. He's done some things that very few people have.
Right.
Which is win 250 home runs.
250 wins.
There, yeah, 250 wins. We're talking about home runs.
Yeah, and 3,000 strikeouts.
Three strikeouts, one of only 14 pitchers to actually be able to make that claim.
I'll do you one better. Do you want to hear the list of left-handed pitchers who have 250 wins, 3,000 strikeouts, and a Cy Young?
Yes.
It's a short list. Steve Carlton, Randy Johnson, CeCe Sabathia.
Yeah, so
they're
there
all,
you go.
Those other two guys are Hall of Famers.
I would say that would
so
put
ERA,
him in the Hall of Fame.
ERA isn't, but I think you're right. I think he has to go just because of that short list. But how about a guy like Cole Hamels? See, this is where
what
it gets a little bit more interesting.
Okay.
He just hit his 2,500th strikeout this week.
And now, how many wins does he have?
Well, but see, wins aren't as important as they used to be. But
okay.
Here's the list of all the left-handed pitchers in history with 2,500 strikeouts and a no-hitter to the resume. That would be Randy Johnson, Warren Spahn, Cole Hamels.
Yeah, again, that's very rarefied air that he's with.
Right. I don't know. Maybe time will tell. If he dies in a plane crash, I'm sure they'll give it to him. Oh, that was too slow.
Too soon.
That was bad.
You're a goddamn
sorry. Bitch. I'm sorry. You were upset about the umpires. You wanted to get into it.
Well, there's been a lot of upset, I think, more this year than in previous years about the umpires, about the consistency of umpires, about the accountability that umpires are held to, and the importance that getting a call right, especially in a close game, that's important. You know, umpires are best when they are not noticed. When they directly affect the possible outcome of a game, they are noticed.
I noticed them when Justin Turner got kicked out of that Walker Buehler game.
Oh, right. And this happened the game after there was controversy on a call in that very same stadium. One different team. The Giants, the four games that they played in L.A., nearly came back from an 8-run deficit. But there was a close bang-bang play at third base on a
bunt. Yeah, that was a great throw. Yeah.
It was a heads-up ball by it was heads-up ball, there's no doubt. It was a bang-bang play. I personally couldn't tell. It was really close. It was a forced play at third base.
Zero outs, by the way. Yeah. Ninth inning.
1-run ball game.
Right.
What happened next, instead of the Giants having
bases loaded,
or at worst, one out and two and runners at second and third.
Right.
They had one out and runners at first and second. The next two batters, Posey and Belt, then flied out. And that was the end of the game. But had the play been called the other way, and it was reviewed.
It was reviewed, exactly. So I don't know what you're complaining about here, but
it wasn't necessarily my complaint. It was the complaint of the losing team, Bruce Bochy and Buster Posey in particular, being a little bit outspoken about it, that there's no explanation of what they saw, what they didn't see upon reviewing.
Well, there's never any explanation.
No, there is never, but I suggest that would be a good thing if it did. It would be nice to know really what the call was, instead of just saying, yeah, he was out, or no, he was safe.
But when are they going to do that? During the game? There's no way. Maybe like in a press release after the game or something. Maybe,
the point is, one of these fly outs would have tied the game had that runner been safe at third base.
Well, had he been a little faster, you wouldn't have needed
it. He looked like in the replay that he did beat the throw.
His foot may have
been on the bag at the time
The foot was on the bag, but the ball in the glove, that's the thing. But the time the ball hits the leather, or the cleat hits the bag, that's it. And it was very close. But since it was called out on the field, it has to be overwhelming to overturn it. That's all. But that's not as bad as even like the Machado ejection. Although that was a fine ejection, whatever. But then the umpires union going on social media and complaining about it after the fact. It's like
that makes the umpires look really bad.
It makes them look terrible. They're supposed to be the ones that are
de-escalating the situation
exactly, to
get the game going.
Right. None of this after-the-fact crybaby BS. And then, of course, we saw Justin Turner wave at the umpire and say hi and get ejected.
Yeah, after it looked like at least two bad calls, one to Turner, a obviously low strike call.
Yeah.
He asked the umpire while still in the batter's box, where was that?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a perfectly legitimate question to ask.
He asks that all the time.
And
Muncy was at the plate.
Even the same at bat, the very next pitch to Turner was in the exact same place. But of course, Turner then had to swing at it because it was called a strike.
Established, yeah.
And he grounded out weakly to second base. Then Muncy was at the bat. There was a ball that was clearly off the plate inside
bat. I mean, even the announcer was like, ball two. Oh,
it was obvious to everyone watching except for the guy calling the balls and strikes.
Right.
And it wasn't clear whether it was Bellinger or Turner in the dugout.
Or anybody for that
said,
matter.
Said, keep it on the plate. Umpire turned to the dugout and said, that's enough. And Justin Turner then did the wave and say, hi.
Hi.
And watch the video. There is video of this that exists out there.
It's pretty good.
He is then ejected.
From the plate, he ejected a guy sitting who he didn't even know necessarily. But he saw the wave, and the wave, he gets ejected for that? I mean,
apparently he had told, the video goes on to show, when Roberts came running out, George Brett with the pine tar.
Sprinting out. What? What? Arms up. Yeah. Screaming.
Why over. The expletive? Yeah. Did you just throw him out?
Why? Yeah. Exactly. Why?
He said that he had been warned twice already. Third warning, you're out. Three strikes, you're out. Oh, no.
And Turner was swinging a hot bat. He was like 6-for-15.
Oh, yeah.
And, luckily, of course, the Dodgers did come back to walk it off. But, I mean, hey, that's pretty rough. And that's, these umpires maybe are getting a little too sensitive. Again, I know it's a tough job. But generally, they've always been really good at letting stuff roll off their backs, right? I mean, if a guy gets too aggressive, then yeah, zero tolerance.
There's also been an exorbitant amount of umpires injured this year.
Really?
And so there are a lot of...
I didn't know that.
Replacement umpires out there.
Yeah, I didn't.
I don't think this qualifies with this incident with Turner because these two particular individuals did have... some history. I believe it was 2017. The same umpire did throw Turner out of a game.
Bill Wilkie? Yeah.
Yeah.
They all know each other. They all know each other, right?
They do. This is a tight...
It's not out of the realm of possibility that the umpire didn't even have to look and see who was shouting. He can maybe just know. He can tell by the voice possibly. Yeah. But again, I mean, a warning for saying keep it on the plate? If you said keep it on the motherfucking plate or something, and you're screaming, hey, Bill, keep it on the plate, okay. But, I mean, maybe he was talking to Muncie. Maybe, I mean, probably not. But, you know, I mean, you can't just throw out a warning and then that's it.
I think he was warned when he was talking to the umpire while
at the plate?
Bat. Yeah.
Really?
I think that's when the first warning may have came.
So he, after he grounded out, maybe he muttered some stuff as he jogged.
Could
the first.
Have been interesting. Could have been.
I did not see that, but
or on his way back to the dugout.
So even though that could have been, that does bring us to the Ignoble Award of the Week.
What do you got this week? I didn't find anything.
Clint Thrasher, does that name?
Thrasher. No, that sounds like either a very bad porn name,
yeah,
or a pro wrestler.
Not Clint Thrasher. Clint, there's an N. If I say mayonnaise man, mayo man, does that ring a bell?
Well, now I would say no until you just recently showed me that video.
So there was a guy, in case you didn't see this, and I tried to post a video on our fantasy. It wouldn't
send
work
me
for
that
some
link.
No, wouldn't work for some reason, but I'll hopefully there's a GIF by now. The Memphis Redbirds, the St. Louis Cardinals affiliate team, in the stands there is a man eating a gallon jug of mayonnaise with a long spoon. It's a big jug. It's like a wooden, like, baking spoon, just eating it straight out of the tub. Now, there are, you know, some different theories. Well, who is this guy? Why is he doing this? Blah, blah, blah. But the bottom line is the guy is eating a tub of mayonnaise in the
straight
stand. Yeah.
Out of the gallon jug. It is quite the sight to behold. Weak stomachs, please be warned.
I know there are people out there. Nick, I'm talking about you, who hate mayonnaise to the extent that there's almost a fear based in there. And certain people find mayonnaise disgusting, horrible. I don't know. I don't see what the big deal is. Mayonnaise is delicious. And if you've ever had the luxury of making homemade mayonnaise, it's incredible.
Mayonnaise can be delicious, but eating it
straight out
of a gallon
jug.
With nothing else to accompany, like fries, like European style, or, you know, it's a fine condiment, but eating it like peanut butter out of a jar, I cannot get behind it.
How do you sleep at night?
At one point, he gets escorted out. But then he comes back.
Well, he wasn't doing anything wrong.
No, he wasn't doing anything wrong.
He might have been doing something that may not have been decent for all, you know, not rated G, perhaps. But he
wasn't
doing...
It wasn't a packed stadium either. There were a few people scattered around him. But it wasn't like he was, like, sitting right next to somebody eating. But then they zoomed in, and he had this big stain on his shirt. Where I think a glob fell. It just reminded me of the episode of Seinfeld where George is at the U.S. Open, just eating that banana split, and they just zoom in on him, and his face is all messed up. Yeah. And of course, his girlfriend sees it, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, yeah, that's, I don't know who this guy is. And I almost feel bad giving him the Ig Nobel Award, because in a, there's a small part of me that's like actually really impressed by this.
In that video, there was it was an Inside Edition report. It was, the journalist in question on camera says, "Yeah, the actual calorie count,
if you were to eat the whole thing
in that gallon jug of mayonnaise, around 23,000 calories. After doing that, you won't have to eat for another week.
You could climb Mount Everest with that. You don't even have to eat the butter." So, Clint Thrasher, I feel like we need a new award for you, because it's something else.
I mean, but he has such the name. I think maybe we can
create the Thrasher Award. All right. Send us your suggestions for the Thrasher Award at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Look, to me, that was pretty great. Oh, man. That was pretty great. I think that's about it. I mean, look, there's some other trade rumors out there. Possibly the Brewers looking for Matt Boyd. Obviously, Madison Bumgarner is still out there. We'll see. We're not going to get into any of that until
trade rumors and All-Stars coming up.
That's true.
You know, in the next couple weeks,
voting finals are almost done. And unfortunately, though, Frankie Montas, who is having a hell of a season, and he was really helping my team out, at least, is suspended for 80 games. Hmm. Got tested positive for Osterine. I don't know what that is. He was pitching 2.70 ERA, 97-21 strikeout to walk ratio over 90 innings in the American League, mind you. But it's a brutal hit, man. It is, but
Murphy's Law will say if things seem to be going well, you have obviously overlooked something.
I mean, look, I'm looking on Amazon right now. I can buy this stuff. It's like, I don't know what it is. It's, I don't know.
It's on the banned substance list, and that's all that really matters in this circumstance.
Investigational Selective Androgen Receptor Modulator, developed by GTX. Anyway, it's kind of a waste. For what it's worth, he said he unknowingly ingested a contaminated supplement. Hmm. That's not going to get my quality starts back, bro. All right? Come on, Frankie. Come on, Frankie. Huh? Anyway, well, I lost another one. It's all right. I don't know what else you got here.
You know, I really don't have anything else this week.
That brings us to last week's trivia question. Is it last week's trivia question?
It was last week's trivia question.
Oh, I had mayonnaise all queued up from Smashing Pumpkins. I was going to play that, but I got too excited. I completely forgot. Oh well.
We can be our outro instead of the usual organ. It's fine, but...
You know what? I think you're right. Screw it. Let's go. Last week's trivia question.
Last week's trivia question. What is the highest scoring game comprised entirely of solo home runs? Did we get any answers this week?
We got zero answers.
Really? No guesses. Oh, not at a all.
Not a one. I feel bad almost.
It's surprising because this game did not happen too long ago. In fact, it happened 2 days ago and 3 years. It was June 20th, 2016, in Miami.
Really? That's not even a hitter's part.
I know, but a game between Colorado and Miami that didn't happen in Colorado. The score was 5-3 in favor of Colorado.
So
eight home runs.
Eight solo home runs.
The only scoring in the game. 5-3, Colorado wins.
That's funny, because I thought there was a game. Dodgers and Giants, I think, where all the runs were solo shots, but I guess it wasn't 5-3.
That's a lot. And it's not even the most home runs hit in a single game, but it was all solo home runs where that was the only mode of scoring.
That is crazy. That, you know, but the way things are going, I wouldn't be surprised if that gets broken
before
the end of the season. Although, yeah, you know, because guys aren't getting on base. They're either striking out or getting homers. So I guess that makes sense. I wonder what the record was before that, but either way. This week's trivia question. So yeah, no winners. No, nobody even
no
tried.
Winners, no one tried.
That was a hard one. You can't really Google that one. But that was a good one, I think. Sometimes they're too easy.
It came right up on Baseball Almanac. Great resource.
Uh-oh. Is that? Did you just spill the beans now? Is that
maybe,
where
maybe.
All these trivia questions are coming from?
Not all of them, but that is a good source.
Alrighty, remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. This week's trivia question: who was the only player with at least 100 triples, 150 homers, and 600 stolen bases? Only guy.
That is a good question. I like this question. The key, I think, is who's known for hitting triples.
Triples, man. That's tough. Right. I mean, I can think of a couple guys, but then I immediately realized, no, that's probably not correct. So, who was the only player with at least 100 triples, 150 homers, 600 stolen bases? BaseballShowPodcast@gmail.com. Leave the answer on the comments section. You know what to do. And this time, come on, somebody's got to at least give a shot in the dark. Doesn't have to be the dark.
Give us your guess.
Could be the late.
What's the worst that can happen?
Probably a Hall of Famer, but maybe not.
We don't shame anyone for
except for Clint
for
Thrasher.
for getting the trivia question wrong.
Although, and again, Thrasher, I'm not shaming you. All right, this is I'm impressed really more than anything. This is clearly all I can think about right now. But go just Google Mayonnaise Man, and I'm sure it'll pop up. Either this song will or Clint Thrasher will. But
someone will probably put. This song to that video. And
oh, sure. If they don't, I will. Yeah. I love this song, by the way. I mean,
go viral on YouTube, man.
From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go get it out of the ocean.